But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire. But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire.
Good morning and welcome to Playing with Fire, Long Island's only food, wine, and lifestyle show. I'm your host, Tom Shardell, broadcasting to all you food-crazed deviants across the island. And I'm here with the head deviant himself, Stu Schrager, producer. How are you?
I'm doing good, Tom.
Good morning.
For our listeners, it might be a little different ambiance as they listen to the show today, as we're actually broadcasting live.
Well, kind of live. Yeah, we're actually taping in Nunzi's in Farmingdale.
Yes, this has been such an exciting couple of weeks. Not only are we here at Nunzi's broadcasting, recording today, but as we mentioned last week, we now have a show sponsor, and that's FreshFinGourmet.com.
Yeah.
And we're so glad to have them aboard with us.
Only took 11 years.
It took 11 years, but we got it done. And if you go to FreshFinGourmet.com, you'll find out about all their specialty seafood, which you can have delivered right to your door.
Boy, does it get any better than that? I mean, make a phone call. You know, it's kind of like being in a restaurant because I have friends that always invite me. You want to go fishing? Why would I do that? I can make a phone call. I have it delivered. You know.
There you go. Yeah, yeah. I wonder if the people here in Nunzi's are familiar with their calamari and squid and all that.
Well, we'll have to turn them on to them because the products are great. I mean, I tested them out. You know, so we took a little test run with the octopus and stuff, and it was great. You know, I love the product. So I think that we should make sure that Nunzi's knows about it before we leave here today. You know.
Well, hopefully we're going to have some of the people from Nunzi's stop by to talk to us a little bit. I was looking over the menu before we started broadcasting, and they have some really cool things. Again, the calamari, we got to find out if they're using Fresh Fin Gourmet, but we will get into that. But they have some interesting menu items that have like a Tom Shardell twist to them.
Oh, really?
So they have a fresh burrata, but it's not just traditional. It says it has corn, hearts of palm, arugula, radicchio, and a basil vinaigrette. And that sounds a little different to me than what I normally order when I'm getting burrata.
No, it shows some interest in the part of the kitchen. I mean, they're doing some interesting things there, which is nice. I'm looking forward to eating here, actually, you know.
There's another similarity between you and their mindset. I believe when at Jewel you had some sort of clam pizza or something that had clams
on it. We did a clam pizza. We did the tuna pizza. We did a bunch of seafood, octopus, you know.
So that's another item. They do have pizza on their menu. There's about four or five varieties, one of which is a clam pizza. I'm curious to find out what their signature pasta dish might be. I'm curious, there's something on the menu called brick chicken. I can't fathom what that might be.
Yeah, that's chicken al maltone. That's kind of a standard classic Tuscan-style chicken. What they do is they cook it on a griddle or a grill, and they weigh it down with a brick. And what it does is it compresses the meat, which allows it to cook a little faster through to the center, you know? Also, while I'm at it, it also makes the skin nice and crusty, you know?
Really?
Crispy, yeah.
Really? So if I'm going with the brick chicken, I might as well go with the smashed potatoes.
You know, brick smash, I get it.
So another thing that's on there, they have, as their side dish, forest mushrooms, which I'm curious to see what, but I'm led to believe it's a variety of different mushrooms that I guess
that's what it sounds like,
or whatever.
Yeah.
And then their different take on cauliflower. They have a roasted cauliflower with pancetta, garlic, corn, chili aioli, Calabrian chili oil.
Oh, nice.
So that sounds a little different than
what you might
find on the normal.
I'd like to meet the chef. Maybe we can chat a little bit tonight.
So we hope to get them out. Other than that, there's just so much going on. I mean, the weather is changing.
Well, I got to tell you, I took a little trip up to my old school.
The Culinary Institute?
It's also a Steely Dan song, but it's, the Culinary Institute. I went there they had a job fair. And, the hardest part of our industry now is to try and find help, you know. So I figured I'd go up there and I'd get maybe some young kids that were graduating, interested or whatever, an extern, to come and work at the club or one of the restaurants. And so I drove up there and I forgot how pretty that area of the state is, in the fall. It's about 2 hours north of where we are, up in Hyde Park. And then if you go a little further up, you have Rhinebeck, which is a gorgeous town. I don't know if you've ever been to Rhinebeck, but it's beautiful.
No.
Great little restaurants there. There's probably, seven or eight really high-end restaurants there that are wonderful. And so I met some friends. I went to this job fair, and I was standing there from 11 to 4. So by the time I got out, I was ready, And I hadn't had anything to eat. I didn't have any breakfast or lunch or anything. So I went to one of the restaurants in the school called the American Bounty. And they have They have like four restaurants on the property. They have a French restaurant, an Italian restaurant, the American restaurant, and they have a diner, you know. And so the American restaurant's kind of interesting, and it's closed between like 3 and 5, but they leave the tavern open. So I went to the bar, I had a glass of wine, had some oysters, and so my friends who were meeting me there, they live about maybe a half an hour south, they were meeting me for dinner, right? So he kind of texts me, and he goes, "Are you ready for tonight?" So I shot a picture of the oysters and the wine. Ready? I started already. You know, are you kidding me? I got ahead of you here, you know? So anyway, we met at this place called Kraft, which is about, I guess it's about maybe 15 minutes south of the school on... right on Route 9 in Poughkeepsie. And it's owned by an alumnus, I can't remember his name, Tom something. I guess he graduated in the 80s or whatever. So he opened up this restaurant, and he's got a lot of the kids from the school working there, you know. And it was a cool little place. I mean, we had a great time. We brought our own wine, you know. They said we were allowed to bring wine in with a corkage fee, so we brought a couple of big Burgundies in and, you know, brought the chef over and, you know, gave him some wine and stuff. It was great. If you're ever in the neighborhood, I recommend it highly. The place is called Kraft, and it's on Route 9 in Poughkeepsie. Real good food. We had a couple of things. I had a couple appetizers, you know, we shared, and I had a duck two ways. I don't know if you ever had a duck two ways, but...
No, what would that
be? Yeah, it was the leg was confit and, you know, cooked in fat, and the breast was seared and, you know, sliced. Real nice. He had, like, cream turnips on it, which you don't see very often, which was a very cool addition, I thought, you know. And some rice or whatever. It was the whole thing was real good. It was a great little restaurant experience. And I tell you what, he was pretty busy. I mean, he had a lot of people there on a Tuesday night, and, you know, we think it was the middle of nowhere, but I guess it's not anymore, you know. Pretty populated up there now. But what a beautiful part of the state, you know.
And this is Poughkeepsie?
Yeah, Poughkeepsie.
Which is right near New Paltz, am I right?
Yeah, New Paltz is right on the other side of the river. Yeah, there's two bars there that's still there after, you know, like 40 years. It's called the Homestead and P&G's. And both of them are still... I was there in 72, so that was, what, 150 years ago or something like that?
Yeah. Give or take a few.
Yeah, a couple of years here and there, you know. And it's still there. And I'm thinking, should I go? I don't know. Last time I went in, I got in trouble, so I'll stay out of there, you know.
So, again, we're broadcasting from Nunzi's in Farmingdale on Segatore, just south of the Farmingdale train station. And we actually have a number of guests here to watch us on radio.
Yeah, yeah, some fans, I guess, you know. We have some people that I recognize.
So regulars that call into us, Bill O'Leary, who just celebrated his birthday out at Amana.
Yeah, he was at Amana.
And Frank Boning is here, who's always writing in and exchanging ideas with us. You made his night by signing his book, which
yeah,
was
he
really
had a copy
cool.
of the Old Testament, as they say. He had a copy of Playing with Fire, and he was, you know, giving some anecdotes about being out in Jamesport Manor and Jedediah Hawkins and stuff. So yeah, it's kind of fun to see these people.
And he was forced to be here, but we have Tommy Conway, who's well known on Max FM.
Yeah,
is our producer today.
That's right.
And we got Luis Clemente, who's well known from her Italian house party days WHLR.
Yeah.
And quite the reputation here in Farmingdale,
and
might I say.
Somehow landed a sponsor.
There you go. There you go. She's part of the reason we're still on the air.
Yeah.
And then we have some number of guests from the radio station itself. We had John Daniels, known for being on WHLI as the evening person, and also does the middays on KJOY 98.3, our sister station.
Yeah.
And newcomer Meredith. So it's... And then Louise has got the whole St. Killian's crowd here. It's a very religious bunch, drinking a lot of alcohol, I might add.
Well, that's all part of the religion, you know. I mean, you got to keep that... you know, and every good religion has some alcohol involved, you know.
So you were talking about being upstate.
Yeah.
So at this time of year, everybody's talking about apples, apples, apples. I want to know about pears. Is it pear season now?
Yeah, pears are coming into season. It's, you know, we've been using them a lot in salads. Today I use them in purees and things like that, drinks. Pears, they usually come in around the beginning of November, and then they last right through January, you know.
So I'm led to believe that where most fruit actually ripens on the tree or the bush or whatever, but pears actually ripen off the tree,
well,
from what I understand.
Fruit ripens on the tree and then rots off it, you know what I mean? And rotting is ripening. You know, when it rots well, it's ripe, and when it rots too much, it's rotten. You know?
So what's the right consistency of a pear? I personally like when it's very hard and crisp.
Yeah, no, I don't like that. I like it. The flavor isn't there, you know? I mean, you got to let it go a little bit.
When
the sugars
mushy,
develop.
It gets very sugary.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you don't want it mushy, but you want it soft and, you know, and you know, like Asian pears are supposed to be hard and crisp, you know. That's when you know they're ripe, you know. But like a Bartlett pear or a Bosch pear, you know, that's got to be kind of a little soft to the touch. You know?
What are those suckling pears, those little things?
Seckle pear.
Seckle
pear. S-E-K-E-L, seckle pears. Yeah, they're real good too, you know. But and the flavor, I don't really get the flavor differences as much as some people say. You know, like I once had a, I was at a wine tasting with a friend of mine, this guy, Ted Ryder. And Ted has a very educated palate. You know, he's been selling wine for years and years. And he said to me, we were in this tasting, we were tasting Sauvignon Blanc. And he said to me, Tom, is that Anjou pear or Bosch pear I taste in the back of that Sauvignon Blanc? And I said, Ted, you have some pear even asking me that, because you wouldn't know a Bosch pear from an Anjou pear if I hit you in the head with it. You know what I mean? So I think sometimes, you know, that there are differences, you know, in subtle flavor differences in the pears, but not much, you know. I think that the ripeness is really what you're looking for, you know.
So, again, the old wives' tale that I heard is if it's tender towards the stem, that's when it's time to eat it.
Yeah, I don't doubt that. I mean, you can feel it, you know. You can feel if there's some give there, you know, it's going to be sweeter. And, you know, if it's hard as a rock, if you're banging it on a table and nothing happens, then, you know, you probably got to wait a little bit, you know.
I mean, again, it seems like the perfect pear is one that's juicy, crisp, and therefore sweet.
Yeah, yeah. I like them softer. I don't like them hard. I think the flavor just explodes as it ripens, you know. And that's really where you want to eat them, you know, I would think.
And then what are some of the options to, as far as different things to do with pears? I saw somebody was talking about in a food blog about pear butter.
Yeah, pear butter is like applesauce. You know what I mean? You just cook them down. Applesauce and apple butter are the same thing. You know, it's just called different things for whatever reason. But pear butter is the same thing. If you just take pears and peel them and, you know, de-seed them and dice them and just let them go in a very slow, thick-bottom pot on the stove, they'll melt down, so you'll have pear sauce, like applesauce. And they call it pear butter.
And what would be the contents of a nice salad that would have pears in it? Is that what type of lettuce? Or it doesn't really matter? Or...
No, I don't think so. I mean, you know, you use the stuff that's around in the fall. I mean, if we're going to stay local and seasonal with pears, then what you should do is, you know, I like arugula. I do an arugula salad with pears, pecorino, and pine nuts. You can also, you know, like, sexy it up a little bit. You could do mixed greens with, like, you know, pears, candied walnuts, and goat cheese, something like that, you know, works really
raisins.
Well. Yeah, you can use raisins, but I don't think it's necessary, you know what I mean? Because you're going to get the sweetness from the pear, so you don't want competing fruit. I think if you put too much fruit in it, it's like a fruit salad, you know what I mean? You don't want to do that.
But the goat cheese, that's a really nice...
It's a great anchor, you know? It's an anchor flavor for the salad, you know?
And then what about pear cakes and pear pies?
Yeah, it is. I mean, they're so versatile. I mean, you know, people make, you know, pear cakes, a pear clafoutie, is something you can make. It's an old French dish. You know,
I don't see much of that. I mean, you always see peach pie, peach tart, but I don't see...
Yeah, well, pears, you know, the flavor's a little more subtle. I mean, I do a pear and brown butter tart sometimes, you know, which is nice, you know, nice and light and kind of, you know, kind of sort of showcases the flavor of the pear.
So now what about, obviously, a lot of people bake apples. Is a pear something that you might bake, or is it something like when you're talking about, you just said fruit, like a fruit compote, and you cook it down?
Now, one of my favorite ways to do pears, I don't bake them that much unless it's in a pie or a, you know, a tart or something. But what I'll do is I'll peel them, I'll leave them whole, right, and peel them, and I'll poach them in a simple syrup, like, which is sugar and water and red wine. And the red wine stains the pear purple, right? It gets this sweet thing. I use rosemary and lemon in the water and this, that, and the other thing, you know. Mostly lemon and rosemary. I put a couple other things in there, but you don't need to know. But then when you poach the pear, it becomes this softer, you know, kind of desserty fruit, you know, almost like fruit cocktail was when we were kids, you know, because it's poached in the sugar water, right? So then what I'll do is I'll cut the bottom off so it stands up on its own. And I'll take that... that syrup that I've been cooking it in and reduce it down till it's really glycerin, you know, kind of very, very concentrated flavor of rosemary, lemon, the pear, and the sugar, right? And then I'll serve that with pumpkin ice cream, a little bit of pumpkin ice cream and the syrup around it, you know. So you got this great little, you know, you got a pear flavor there. You have the rosemary and a lemon, which is really kind of, you know, complementary to the pear. And then you have pumpkin ice cream, which is seasonal also, which is, you know, I think it's a great little dessert.
Really? I saw an interesting recipe. It really hit me. Pork tenderloin and pears.
Yeah, how were the pears prepared? You remember?
No. I was going
to
ask you.
You want me to tell you?
Yeah.
All right. Well, pork tenderloin is a great item because it cooks really quickly. It's fairly inexpensive, you know. It's tender as hell, and it tastes good. So it's got all four, you know, like the holy trinity thing, you know, of flavor and cost and whatever. So what you would do is, basically, I like to blacken the outside of the pork tenderloin, a little blackening seasoning on that, you know.
Really?
Yeah. And then what I would do is I would take the pears and I would make a pear butter, a pear puree, you know, warm pear puree, and serve that underneath. So once you get that all cooked down, you can use it as a puree. Just put it along the plate because the tenderloin is about 6 inches long, 6-5 inches long. And you're going to blacken that on the outside, finish it in the oven, right? And let it rest a minute or two when you take it out. And then slice it on the bias and lay it right over the pear puree. And then you could take saba, a little balsamic syrup if you want, or a pan gravy, and you can put that over the top. You know, if you want potatoes, you can make potatoes.
And is there anything you would play? Would you put that on top of couscous or anything? Or
yeah, you know, I would serve it with potatoes. I like it with something a little more, you know, because the pear has that, you know, that pear butter is going to have that softer consistency anyway. So to put, you know, like couscous or rice or something soft with the soft, it doesn't make sense to me. You know, I'd rather have like a crispier potato, you know, or something that was either roasted or, you know, maybe sautéed, you know, boiled and then sautéed, you know, so you have a little textural crunch. Because you're going to have softness in the pork anyway. It's like the tenderloin. It's like pork tenderloins are like the filet mignon of the pig, you know what I mean? So they're very, very tender. And so that's soft, and you get the soft pear. So you want something that has a little moxie to it, you know, give you a textural contrast.
So I was just perusing the menu a little bit, and I forgot to mention, I know when you had Jewel, you had this really cool dish, which was an appetizer, Asian duck wings.
Yeah.
So they have something that I think is interesting. I'm not sure that it would be for me, but limoncello wings.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, we'll have to try them out later, you know. We'll see what they come out with. You know, lemon on the wings, you know, I'd have to see it to believe it kind of thing. You know, I mean, I don't know, you know.
Well, that's intriguing to me also because when we talk about Rao's, and I got to dine there, one of their specialties was lemon chicken. So I just...
Well, chicken and lemon, I mean, it's a combination. I mean, piccata, franchise, all of those classic dishes are chicken with lemon, you know. So that works, you know. And when you do that, like you were talking about before, that chicken under a brick, you know, when I marinate the chickens before I do that, I always use a little lemon in there, or mustard, you know, give it that tartness, you know. Because chicken's kind of a mild flavor, you know, needs a little help, you know, needs a little stuff in there, you know, to get it going.
Well, I guess we should take a break and let's hear a little message from FreshFinGourmet.com, and then we'll be back with more from Nunzi's here in Farmingdale.
All right.
Attention seafood lovers. Introducing FreshFinGourmet.com. Now you can enjoy specialty seafood delivered directly to your door. Their seafood products are sourced from mineral-rich waters across the globe and are responsibly harvested. Family-owned and operated by the Gulo family, who began their legacy in the food business from their personal love for seafood. The holidays are coming. Order all the delicacies for the Night of Seven Fishes. You can order sushi-grade octopus, squid, Chilean sea bass, wild Dover sole filet, and much more. They also offer premium meat, imported Sicilian desserts, and delicious pasta. Get the fastest delivery and shipping in the business. And their attention to detail in both packing and shipping assures freshness and quality. Go to FreshFinGourmet.com and see the vast array of choices for your special meal creation. That's Fresh, FIN, Gourmet.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Playing with Fire on 1100 WHLI and 104.7 FM WHLI. And we're here broadcasting live from Nunzi's in Farmingdale. As you all know, Playing with Fire is Long Island's own food, wine, and lifestyle show hosted by chef extraordinaire Tom Shawdell.
Oh, my God. You got your live voice on today, I think, you know? So, listen, the people at Nunzi's were nice enough to bring us over a little wine. We're going to do a little wine tasting on the air here.
So right? Let me get my I brought a Tom Shawdell bandana.
Nice.
And I'm going to put it on you now.
Okay.
And we're going to try the first one, and I want to know if you can figure out. First, let's be real easy. Can you tell if it's a red wine or a white wine or a?
I can't really tell. It's dark. Yeah, I'm going to go with white. I'm thinking it's a white wine. Yeah. It's got classic California Chardonnay flavors, you know. It's got some oak in there, and it's a little on the like off dry side, which leads me to believe, I mean, I know what it is, but I mean, it leads me to believe it's California. I would have been able to pick that out in a heartbeat, you know. Not the vineyard, you know, for sure, but certainly it's a California Chardonnay.
So what are the key characteristics that made you realize that that was a Chardonnay?
Chardonnay has, they all have their own flavors, you know. I think the thing that made me know it was a Chardonnay is I've drunk oceans of it, you know what I mean? So I know what the flavor profiles are, and so it just has that. There's that you can tell is oak in there. It was barrel fermented. I can tell there's a little bit of tastes like there's a little bit of RS in there, which is residual sugar. They'll probably tell you no, but I kind of think there is. They tend, you know, the California ones to me tend to be. It's a style. It's a ripe style, is what I should say. You know, and so there's a lot of sun out there. They get a lot of sun and they get a lot of ripeness in there. In their grapes, and that's probably what we're tasting, you know.
So tell me though, as far as Chardonnays, if you tasted something from one of the Long Island vineyards, would it have a similar
They're different
profile?
No, because you have it's two different kinds of wine. You have cool climate winemaking, and you have hot climate, warm climate winemaking, right? So the cool climate wines come from Long Island, Bordeaux, you know, France, Italy. You know, the warm climate wines, they come from, you know, Australia, California, down south, southern South America, Chile, you know. And they have different ripening potential because of the sun. You know, California has an embarrassment of sunlight out there. It's just all they have, you know. So some of these, you know, I've heard of vintages in California that were so warm that they were picking the champagne grapes in July, which is, you know, pretty early to be harvesting grapes. But, you know, they get so much sunlight out there that they can't help it. You know? But that's what I think you're tasting. There's a ripeness there. There's like almost like a sweetness, you know.
So what would be one of your go-to? So you're having, believe it or not, it's probably very rare, but you're having a group of friends over at the restaurant. You're not working.
Right.
Not like that birthday party that Courtney threw you,
yeah.
Where it was your birthday, and you worked harder than you ever worked before.
Yeah, like a rented mule.
Right.
Yeah.
But what would be your go-to Chardonnay? Is it a local one? Is it an imported one?
If I'm drinking Chardonnay, if I just have my choice of anything, I'm going to go Burgundy. I'm a Burgundy guy. I started on Burgundy. I'll die on Burgundy. I mean, they just have just such a great, what would you call it, like a great terroir over there for making Chardonnay. And I think the greatest Chardonnays in the world come from there. Now, that's not to say there aren't great Chardonnays in California. I think there's real good Chardonnays in Long Island, you know. And South America, look, every wine-producing region makes good wine and mediocre wine. I mean, and that's by design. You know, I mean, there are wineries that produce hundreds of thousands of cases of wine. And, you know, they're after a specific customer. You know, they're looking for that customer that wants to drink, you know, $8, $10, $12 bottles of wine. That's not as serious as, like, say, a Burgundy producer that some of those bottles go for $2,000 or $3,000 a bottle. You know, that's a rarefied clientele that you're looking for at that point, you know.
And just remind me, because there's a story that I want to share with you from one of our listeners when you start talking about high-end bottles of wine.
Uh-oh.
But when you're talking about Chardonnay and we're talking about Long Island, What are some of the ones that stand out from the local vineyards that you might want to just highlight?
Some of my favorites are Pominock, you know, where I make my own Chardonnay. McCary does a great job. Jamesport does a great job. McCall does a great job. Yeah, this, you know, one of the wines out there, I'm diverging into Merlot a little bit, but Adam Supernot, who has Coffee Pot Cellars, he's the winemaker of one of the bigger wineries out there, but he has his own little thing called Coffee Pot Cellars. His wine was just chosen as one of the top 100 of the year.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, by, I think it was Wine Advocate or whatever. But yeah, I mean, you know, so the proof is in the pudding. They're making great wine out there. But those are the ones, those are the vineyards. And Roanoke is another one that I would always stay
and those
with.
Those are all wines at about $20 a bottle?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, in that zone, you know,
$20, and readily available in most wine shops on Long Island.
You would hope. I mean, that's probably not the case. I mean, you know, there's a lot of wine shops that won't carry Long Island wines. And so, you know, I don't patronize them myself, you know. But you go to Stu Leonard's or, you know, what's the big one? The wine thing over there in Westbury.
Oh, Total Wine.
Total Wine. You know, places like that that are serious about their inventory and they know their wine. I mean, you'll find them there, you know. And, or, you know, the best part is just go to the vineyard. You know, taste before you buy. You know, buy it. It's like when you test out a car, you know what I mean? You want to go check them out. You can check them out. And then,
Tom, it's hard to stay focused. I'm looking at our radio station, our radio listeners, and they're all socializing and getting to know each other.
Well, it's, you know, could form a cult here, you know. Who knows, you know.
Who knew? So now, we're going to try another wine. Let's do a red wine, but I want to find out from you. I'm not going to tell you what it is, and I want to know, is it a Merlet? Is it a Malbec?
A Merlet?
I've never
had a Merlet.
Oh, my God.
This is a family show, you know.
That Chardonnay just went to my head.
You are a cheap date. I can't believe it.
I mean, maybe I'm serving you a Chianti or a Super
Tuscan. I want to have a Chardonnay. A Chardonnay and a Merlet.
Oh, boy.
Yikes.
So here we go. So the red wine, tell me what you think it might be.
What I think.
We know it's not a Merlet.
It couldn't possibly be a Merlet. It tastes like old world to me. It tastes, my first inclination is cool climate wine, old world. It's definitely not California. And I don't think it's South America. So I would go with... Italy only because the varietal taste to me, it has acid, a good acid backbone. And generally the Italians make wines that are specifically to go with food. And food needs acid. So the wines tend to be a little more acidic than the French. And I know Cabernet and Merlot, or Merlet, however you say it, pretty well.
That's the Jewish version.
Well, Chaim. Mazel tov. So anyway, I would go with Italian. And since we're in Nunzi's, you know, that's probably the first hint. And I know it's not a Barolo. So my guess is Sangiovese.
Well, actually, it's a Chianti.
Well, that's what Sangiovese is, Chianti. Chianti is Sangiovese, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So now I'm intrigued. So... when you go to a nice Italian restaurant like Nunzi's, you obviously have anything from flatbread pizzas to pasta to chicken and fish. And so, like, how do you, you know, the old adage about, I guess, you know, fish you have white wine and steak you have red wine. What do you do when you're having a mixed meal?
Listen, I know the orthodoxy, you know. I've been schooled in this stuff for 45 years. My advice is drink what you like, period, you know. If you like red with flounder, drink it. If you like white with, you know, elk, drink it. Who cares, you know what I mean? It's like I always see, you know, people always say to me, oh, you must go crazy when somebody asks for, like, ketchup on their steak or cook their porterhouse. Well done. I couldn't care less. You bought it. It's yours, you know what I mean? You do whatever you want to it, you know. Just enjoy it is really the key. I'm more worried about you having fun and liking it than I am about how you do it.
Well, that brings up a whole nother discussion. So when you're doing, I guess it mostly relates to steak, but obviously when you order a steak, your waiter will ask you, how do you want it prepared? And if you say, you know, medium or medium rare, well, rare or whatever, is it potentially not going to get to you the right way? I mean, do you really need to just describe the color of what you're looking for?
You know, the problem is it's all subjective, right? So one man's medium rare is another man's medium. You know, it's one of those things. So when I cook steaks, so my guys cook steaks, I tell them to err on the side of rareness, because I can always add a little more fire. I can't take it away, obviously, you know. So if somebody orders it medium rare, I tend to go to the rarer side of medium rare. They go to the medium rarer side of medium, you know. So you're always kind of trying to hedge your bets. Most people have a window that's reasonable, you know, like with the color, it's, you know, maybe a little too red or maybe a little too gray, you know, they're still okay with it, you know. Yeah, the occasional lunatic that comes in, you know, we had a guy, this is a great story. This guy comes into the restaurant, he orders a lamb rack, right, medium rare. So the lamb rack is carved, you know, it's sliced into eight pieces, so you can see the degree of doneness, right? So I send it out. The guy sends it back. It's too well done. I'm like, ah, you know. So the cook says to me, what do you want me to do with it? I said, put it on the side in case we get a medium or medium well. You know, we'll use it for that. I send the second one out. I said, just make this one rare, right? So he sends the second one out rare. Now it's not well done enough, you know. It's just two racks of lamb. He's running $15 piece of meat here. He's ruining, right? So I said, well, give me the first one. He goes, what? Give me the first one. So I take the first one. I put more fire on it, right? Send it out. It's perfect. Thank you. It's like, so there are people who decide on the way over in the car that something's going to be sent back. We just got to figure out what it is when we get there. You know?
So are there many people that order what is called black and blue? I guess which is almost,
you know,
is almost raw?
Yeah, that was the thing in the 70s. I don't see that too much anymore. You get the occasional guy that likes it like that, but I don't see the pleasure in that. I mean, I'm a rare to medium rare guy. I get that. You know, but when black and blue, it's like cold in the middle and, you know, and blue. I mean, it's like, ugh, you know, I don't know. You know, not for me.
So then you're talking about the different ways to serve it. So you said you're a medium rare guy?
Yeah.
So now what about people, and you alluded to it before, you don't really care, but when people, like all the steak restaurants on Long Island at least, they all have their own signature steak sauce.
Yeah.
Some of them even use it for salad dressing. But what's your take on using steak sauces and stuff?
Again, it's your piece of meat. Once you bought it, I don't care what you do with it, you know. I make my own steak sauce, you know, for the restaurants and the clubs because people like it, you know, for whatever reason. You know, I call it AT. You know, instead of A1, I got AT, hey Tom, you know. And, you know, the bottom line is it's good flavor. I mean, you know, I'm okay with it, you know. I think steak needs help. I mean, it needs a lot of salt, you know. I tend to salt, you know, steaks very heavily, you know. But it's, you know, it's your steak. Eat it the way you like it. You know?
There you go.
Now, I think that, I should qualify this, you know, back to the wine pairing thing, because there are certain wines that go better with certain dishes, if that's, in fact, what you want to do. So if you're interested in pairing how a wine can enhance the flavor of something, then you got to kind of stick to the tried and true methods, you know, of trying to find out, do I want the wine to cut through or do I want the wine to complement, or, you know, how you want to handle that. You know, so there are rules or like guidelines to help you do that, you know. But above and beyond that, if you're not looking or if it's not critical for you, you know, to make that pairing work, drink whatever you want, you know.
So I want to make an observation about the Chardonnay that we had. I personally am not a big Chardonnay guy. Although there's some people that I hang out with, they're really into Chardonnay. But then you'll probably laugh at them because it has to be Kendall Jackson. And I know, like, when I go to the store to serve them, there's usually, like, two versions. One's more smoky than the other and whatever.
Well, Kendall Jackson kind of really set Chardonnay making on its ear back in the early 80s. And Jess Jackson was a lawyer in San Francisco, and he bought a vineyard and then wound up with this Kendall Jackson thing. And they started putting unfermented juice back into the wine, you know, which is okay. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it, but it's basically adding sugar was what he was doing. And they really over-oaked a lot of the stuff, but it was a style that caught on with the American public big time. And so what happened was, you know, Americans tend to talk dry and drink sweet, you know. So it got real popular. It became, Chardonnay became sort of a synonym for white wine, you know, in the 80s. It was like, I'll have a Chardonnay. That meant I'll have a white wine. That meant I didn't care what I'm drinking. I just want, and now it's Pinot Grigio. It's the same way, you know. But it was a style of Cordon, and for some of us who were serious Chardonnay drinkers, it turned me off for Chardonnay for a long time, other than Burgundy, because Burgundy's Burgundy, and they just do it right, you know? But now you see it's like coming back around. You have some serious winemakers that are out there, and you know, to his credit, you know, he sold a lot of wine. I mean, you know, it's hard to argue with it, you know? But, you know, it's he sold a lot of wine to, I think, people who weren't as discerning as some of us are about Chardonnay. And now you see a lot of, you know, stainless steel fermented Chardonnays coming back into vogue. You see very light use of oak. There's no more unfermented juice or RS, residual sugar, back in the wines. So they're becoming more serious Chardonnays again, which is, in my humble opinion, I'm glad to see it, you know, because that's really where the wine should be. The wine should be an expression of the grape, not an expression of the you know, the chemistry or the tasting room, you know, because you can manipulate anything you want with this stuff now, you know. I mean, they used to put like little wood chips in there, you know, to kind of, you know, give that oak flavor if it wasn't barrel fermented.
It's funny, again, it's not that I don't like the Chardonnay that we're drinking tonight, but oh my goodness, as I spoke last week, I guess it's a Circo? What was that? The Mediterranean?
The Circo.
That hit the mark for me. This, just not me.
Well, I got to tell you a story. If one of my producers, or distributors, I should say, came in to the restaurant the other day and brought me a grape that I didn't know from France. Now, there's very few grapes that I haven't had an intimate relationship with over the last 40 years, you know? So he brings in this Tresellier. He goes, have you ever had a Tresellier? I said, no, I haven't. I can't even remember even hearing about it. He says it's grown in the Loire Valley, which is basically known for Sauvignon Blanc and Cabernet Franc, you know, and some Pinot Noir. Anyway, so I taste this wine, and it's like, you know, I had Mike Dorio was over the house last night, right? So he raids my wine cellar whenever he comes in. So I said, I got a wine for you to try. So we open up this Tresellier, and he says, well, what do you think it tastes like? I said, it tastes to me like if Chardonnay and Sauvignon Blanc had a baby, this is what it would be like. You know, it's kind of like, it's got some glycerin to it and body like a Chardonnay has, but it cuts through like Sauvignon Blanc does. You know, it's really kind of an odd thing. You know, like the perfect combination of both of the qualities of those grapes, you know. And they don't make much of it. It's not really expensive. I think I paid $17 a bottle wholesale. So that would probably translate into a $40 bottle in the store, something like that. But if you ever see it, pick it up. It's phenomenal. I'll open one up with you one day. Sounds like a plan. Yeah.
So the next wine, again, I got you. You need to put on your bandana, cover your eyes. So, again, if I'm curious to know if you can tell if it's a red wine or a white wine. Or it's a sparkling wine, whatever. So
if I can't tell it's a red or a white wine, what am I, Stevie Wonder?
Well, yeah, you got the bandana over your eyes.
I forgot that part.
Wow, theater, radio is really theater of the mind.
Yeah, apparently. Trying to identify that grape. That's a tough one. You know, rosés are tough because they can be made of anything. I mean, rosés could be Cab Sauv, Merlot, Grenache, and so Pinot Noir.
So this is a little bland, right?
It is. Yeah, it's soft. It's not very assertive.
Well, I'm going to spoil the surprise. It's a rosé, but it doesn't have a distinct oomph to it.
No, it falls. It kind of fades out quickly on the palate. You know, it doesn't have much of a finish.
So if I'm getting the veal chop here with the cherry peppers that's really spicy, at least to my palate, is this the type of thing that soothes it?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, rosé is good with veal. Rosé is great with veal. It's great with turkey, you know, great with chicken, tuna. You know, there's a lot of lamb even. You know, if it's an assertive rosé, I would have it with lamb. This tastes to me like it's probably, I want to say old world, but I'm not sure. I can't get it. Maybe not.
I'm curious to what our producer and engineer today, Tommy, is drinking.
I'm drinking seltzer with lime. It's a little old world, but it's biting through.
The limes were grown in Croatia?
Sure.
Yeah, there you go.
Do you notice the protocol, though? We invited the engineer producer into the program, unlike previous editions.
Yeah, they used to just maraud in like Attila the Hun. You know?
You guys are a class act. Thank
you. Oh, yeah. Yeah, quite the radio duo.
So now that we explored all these different wines, I'm also looking through the menu here. they have the traditional linguine and clam sauce. Are you a white clam sauce guy or a red clam sauce guy?
White, yeah. I think that, you know, the white wine and white clam sauce, you know, kind of complements it. I think red kind of beats it up a little bit.
Red's got to be a small part of what people order when they do it.
I would think so, yeah. I mean, you know, the tomatoes and clams is just, you know, fish is delicate, you know, even shellfish. So I think once you throw a really assertive flavor in there, like tomato, it kind of gets lost a little bit, you know. So I wouldn't do that. I'm definitely a...
Sometimes I see, and I don't know what the name of the dish is, but it would be like a linguine with clams in the shell, shrimp, pieces of tomato, like a tomato broth type of garlicly tomato broth.
Yeah.
That seems to work, right?
Yeah, if it's brothy, I guess so, yeah. You know, but I don't know. I still think the tomato's a little too strong a flavor for that. And that's just for me, you know what I mean? Not like it's religion or anything.
Well, it's interesting you say that. So this time of year, it's not unusual to have a lot of different stuffed raviolis. And I guess it's an oxymoron, stuffed ravioli.
Yeah.
But what I'm getting at is there'll be like butternut squash ravioli. There'll be pumpkin ravioli. And I'm not a big believer in the heavier sauces. You know, so many times it will be on the menu with a vodka sauce or even a red sauce. But isn't that really calling for like a buttery type?
Yeah, when you use squashes, you know, I mean, you know, I do pumpkin ravioli and butternut squash ravioli this time of year fairly frequently. And the only two sauces I tend to use are brown butter and sage.
I was going to say a fragrant, buttery sauce is what...
The other one I use is foie gras apples and sage, which is... And it's got heavy cream in it. It's a little bit more, you know, unctuous and more...
Really, a cream sauce?
Yeah, it's a cream.
Wow.
But it's cut. You know, I cut it with apple cider vinegar and the sage. And it doesn't... It kind of... When you introduce an acid, you know, to a butter sauce or a cream sauce, it lightens it considerably, you know. So it cuts through all of that fat, you know, and gives you like a little better mouthfeel and, you know, just a better, a better flavor.
And how do you cook ravioli? I mean, do you boil them or that's?
Yeah. Yeah, it's boiled pretty quickly, you know, depending on how thick it is or whatever, you know. It goes pretty fast, you know.
But when you go to stuffed shells or manicotti, is that something you bake rather than...
Yeah, I don't do that stuff, but yeah, that's a baked thing, you know. It's baked in tomato sauce. Those things are all the same to me. It's almost like, you know, it's like Mexican food. You know, you have a red pile, a brown pile, and a green pile of sour cream, right? And if it's shaped this way, it's a chimichanga. If it's shaped that way, it's, you know, it's like same thing, right? It's the same thing with Italian food. Stuffed shells, manigotti, however you want to say it. It's the same thing. It's just, you know, ricotta cheese stuffed in. Ravioli's the same, you know. So I think if you're going to do that, you know, listen, grandma makes a great ravioli. Everybody's grandma makes a great ravioli, right? If you make it by hand. But you buy those frozen ones, they all taste the same to me, you know?
It's funny. I was just with somebody the other day, and they work for the Islanders. And somehow they got friendly with one of the former Jets. He said, why don't you come, you know, to my mom's? And, you know, have Sunday meal with us. My mom makes the best raviolis or whatever. And the story goes on that the guy showed up, and he was a Polish guy. But he starts going, I thought you're supposed to be able to cut the raviolis with a fork. And he goes, knucklehead, what do you as a Polish guy know about, you know, raviolis?
Yeah, they know about pierogies. Same thing, you know, right?
So at this juncture in the show, I want to share... an interesting email from the mailbag. Last week we had reached out to our listeners to tell an interesting food or wine story. And I'm going to attempt to read this email to you. So it's from Frank DeFulvio. And he goes on to say, good morning, Tom and Stu. You requested a food and wine story that would be interesting. Well, we have one. My wife and I would eat at Restaurant Danielle 2 to 3 times a year on the occasion of our 25th wedding anniversary. We had the reservation, and because we lived on Long Island, we rented a limo for the evening. Upon arrival at the restaurant, standing outside of the restaurant was Danielle, the maitre d'.
The owner.
His wife, sommelier, and head waiter. Danielle walked to the limo, opened the door for my wife and I, and my wife wanted to kill me as she thought I had arranged all this. I had not. After being seated for dinner and ordering his 8-course tasting dinner and a bottle of wine, and we started to enjoy the wine, after our third course, Ricardo, the head waiter, came up to our table and told us that he had a treat for us. A customer did not finish their $2,000 bottle of wine, a bottle of Montrachet. Yes. and said he
Is that
would
the Jewish version again.
There you go.
Apparently, yeah.
And said he would offer us the wine as an anniversary present. As we were enjoying this magnificent bottle of wine, our waiter sees that our wine glasses are getting low. He was not aware that we were drinking the fine wine that we were offered. And Bruno, the maitre d', saw that our regular wine was poured on top of that wine. And he said, oh, my goodness.
It's a cuvee.
He goes, I cannot stand for this. And he opened a brand new $2,000 bottle of wine.
Nice move.
And served it to us.
Love that.
My wife and I told them, you really don't have to do this, but they insisted. About 10 minutes later, Danielle came to our table
crying
to wish us happy anniversary and apologize for what happened.
Got a Kleenex in his hand.
Without a doubt, this was an anniversary to remember for the rest of our lives, and we will never forget that special night.
That's great.
So I have a couple of comments. First of all, that is the most incredible story.
Class act.
And everybody should experience something like that once in their life.
Yeah, yeah.
But yes, Frank, you win the gift certificate,
That's
the $50
it.
Gift certificate to Westbury Manor.
Nice.
And enjoy it. But I assure you, you're not going to get a $2,000 bottle of wine out of it.
Not a free one anyway.
But that's just totally, totally crazy and wonderful. But I think the moral of the story is, if you do things without expectation, sometimes the most wonderful things happen. You know, if you try to beat them out of a bottle of wine because you said it was corked or something, this wouldn't happen.
This is the yin and yang of Danielle. I mean, you know, they get a free $2,000 bottle of wine. I get kicked out because I got Crocs on, you know. It's unbelievable, you know.
So I'm looking here that now Luis sat down by us. We need to get some of the ownership here to talk about the restaurant. Otherwise, it's going to be a two-episode show.
Okay. Well, we could talk about it for them, you know. I mean, listen, I mean, we're here on a Wednesday night. The place is hopping. Obviously, they're making inroads into the neighborhood, you know. Things look pretty good to me.
And thanks to Luis for bringing the St. Killian's group here. Again, they're running out of wine at the restaurant. There's plenty of tea, though.
So I got to tell you one great restaurant story about, you know, kind of along the lines, but the opposite way of, what's his name, Frank's story. When I was a kid, I used to go into the city, and I was studying cooking at CIA, and I would save up for months and months and months, and I would take what money I had, and I would go into the city, and I would have these great meals at, like, the old French restaurants, like Lutèce and Grand Huy and places like that. So I used to drag...
Who was the guy that ran Lutèce?
Andrew Saltner.
Yes, yes.
So anyway, I would drag my friend Marty in with me, and he was like always a good sport. He had a pretty good job, so we go in. So I go in there, I take my girlfriend, him, his girlfriend. I'm like 19 at the time, right? So we go to Lutèce, and we sit down, and we go through this whole thing. At the end of the meal, I want to show the waiter how much I know about what I know, right? So I said, do you have any cognacs, you know? So he says, yeah. I said, do you have, you know, Remy Martin Cordon Bleu? He goes, oui, monsieur, but perhaps I could suggest something just a little finer. I said, okay, finer's good with me. What do you got? He goes, I have Louis XIII, 75-year-old cognac, beautiful cognac, right? Now, I don't know at the time, and this is 45, 50 years ago, It's $25 a pour.
Is it safe to admit to realize that your hair was probably a little shorter then?
No, it wasn't. It was longer then. So anyway, I said, all right, bring us four. Now, I don't realize I just ordered $100 worth of cognac. I don't think the whole bill came to $65, right? So I ordered $100 worth of cognac. I have the cognac. It's the best I've ever had in my life. I order a second round. I have $200 worth of cognac on the bill, right? So we're drinking it, and, you know, I'm an abuser, right? So the girls bow out, and Marty and I have one more. I have $250 worth of cognac on the bill. So now here comes the bill, and I'm expecting, like, $85. And it's, like, $370 in 1972, you know? I'm making, you know, $9 an hour or whatever the hell I'm making. It was, like, ridiculous, right? So I go through this whole thing, and now I'm looking at this bill, and I'm saying to me, I said, Jesus, do you have a credit card? Because, like, we're not going to get out of here. You know, we're washing dishes for a month, you know? But the guy must have seen me coming, man. He was trolling. You know, oh my God.
I'm telling you, the residents of Farmingdale must have seen you coming. There's a line out the door here on a Wednesday night at Nunzi's. And I'm sure they're here to see you.
No, not me. You're the guy. You're the new superstar here, you know.
So
he's the only guy I ever know that tasted Merlot.
Fortunately, Louise
had a bottle of Merlot before. And Chardonnay.
Louise is off mic, so she can't talk.
Yeah.
But it would be great if we can actually give away tonight on the radio show a $50 Nunzi's gift card. I don't know if you can make that happen.
Yeah, you know what? We'll just tell them to come in and say we sent them. That's all. Yeah, it'd be a surprise. It's like chef surprise. Tom sent me. He said that you would put $50 up if I would come in and say hello. That's all, you know.
No, well, even if, no matter what, there is a $50 Nunzi's gift card. Let's get another crazy story like Frank sent in and see who can have the top story this week. So it's fire@whli.com, fire@whli.com. Maybe talk about an interesting story like that, or dining in a restaurant and a celebrity being there, and what interaction or non-interaction there might have been. So let's leave it to that. And again, we'll come up with a $50 Nunzi's gift card for some lucky listener. But I think we need to take another break so we can talk about
new
our sponsor.
Yeah.
Attention seafood lovers. Introducing FreshFinGourmet.com. Now you can enjoy specialty seafood delivered directly to your door. Their seafood products are sourced from mineral-rich waters across the globe and are responsibly harvested. Family-owned and operated by the Gulo family, who began their legacy in the food business from their personal love for seafood. The holidays are coming. Order all the delicacies for the Night of Seven Fishes. You can order sushi-grade octopus, squid, Chilean sea bass, wild Dover sole filet, and much more. They also offer premium meat, imported Sicilian desserts, and delicious pasta. Get the fastest delivery and shipping in the business. And their attention to detail in both packing and shipping assures freshness and quality. Go to FreshFinGourmet.com and see the vast array of choices for your special meal creation. That's Fresh, F-I-N, Gourmet.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Playing With Fire on 1100 WHLI and 104.7 WHLI FM with your host, Tom Shardell, chef, author, and restaurateur. And we're live here at Nunzi's in Farmingdale.
Yeah, I mean, what a crowd they have here tonight. Oh, my God. It must be 70, 80 people. Hi. Hi, you don't listen to the show? Oh, that's great. Yeah? How was it? You went to the Italian restaurant? You liked it? Oh, good. Okay. Yeah, we have some fans of the show here today at Nunzi's. It's,
we have Steve
it's great.
Solomon and his...
Well, thank you. We appreciate that. Maybe we'll get you as addicted, you know? There you go. All right.
All good.
So, yeah, we're looking for some fun stories from restaurant people, right?
Yes. So, fire@whli.com. It's fire@whli.com. It's been quite the experience broadcasting live at a restaurant.
Yeah, apparently we're not that good at this. You know, so we need to do this again, you know, get to kind of...
It's all good. We actually had a number of people come in and stop by, and we just heard a random guest
spent the afternoon getting here.
Yeah,
Mr. Solomon, he emails us once in a while, right?
Yes. So, again, we'll keep everybody informed of our other live events and try to make a number of them in the coming year.
All right. I have to make a shameless plug, though. You know, my book is coming out over the winter, my second book. called Second Helping. And I just want to let people know that if you're interested in getting a copy, I will be informing you how to do that. It's coming through Amazon. I may have some hardcovers, ebooks.
Well, we're
going
to have to do some autograph sessions.
Yeah, we'll do some signings and stuff. It'll be a lot of fun, you know. A lot of fun. So anyway, I guess we're getting to that point where we got to sign off here, you know.
Yeah, just for our listeners real quick, we'll talk about Nunzi's in a little more depth next week or the following week. We have some Thanksgiving stuff coming up, obviously.
Yeah.
But thank you to the ownership and staff of Nunzi's here in Farmingdale. And I leave it to you.
All right. Well, we're going to close with Tom's three keys to life, like always. Life is too short to drink bad Merlot. Treat every meal like it was your last. And keep chocolate in your life as important as sex and pizza. And we will see you next week.
Amano Osteria and Wine Bar has been created by Adam Lovett and Tom Shordell to bring the feel and flavors of a true Tuscan Osteria to the North Fork. Amano showcases local growers, farmers, cheese, and winemakers, marrying their ingredients with the taste traditions of the Tuscan countryside. The casual appeal, the flavors of Italy, and a moderate price structure appeal to all, ensuring year-round patronage. This North Fork eatery sends out snappy salads and seafood, pastas and antipasta, along with a respectable wine list. Amano features local vineyards and Italian varietals from the U.S. and Italian wines. The kitchen remains open until 11 and has established a later dining crowd, sparking a local nightlife dining scene. Amano is on the cutting edge of a new high-quality and affordable dining experience on the North Fork. Amano Osteria and Wine Bar, 13550 Main Road in Matatuck. Serving dinner daily, Amano is also open for lunch on Saturday and Sunday. For reservations and further information, call them at 631-298-4800 or visit them on the web at amanorestaurant.com.
Sweet Fancy Long Island is the award-winning dessert and pastry company that has become one of the hottest sources for bakery treats available for delivery on Long Island. Each mouth-watering creation has a personality all its own, teasing the palate with its rich flavors, complex textures, and eye-catching presentations. All items at Sweet Fancy Long Island are made 100% from scratch using the highest quality ingredients: Belgian chocolate, European butter, vanilla beans from Tahiti, and the richest, most flavorful fruits available. Their clients can enjoy any one of our delectable confections from one-of-a-kind pastries, specialty and occasion cakes, French macarons, and karma cups. Their signature line includes an assortment of charming personalized size desserts served in miniature mason jars. The Sweet Fancy Long Island team takes great pride in presenting a unique, delicious, and elegant dessert experience and works closely with every client to create a memorable dessert that will add an exciting dimension to any celebration. Presently, the work of Sweet Fancy Long Island have been found in some of the area's top restaurants, country clubs, gourmet shops, catering facilities, and Food Network. Go to sweetfancyli.com to order online or to view their incredible gallery of desserts.
Attention seafood lovers! Introducing FreshFinGourmet.com. Now you can enjoy specialty seafood delivered directly to your door. Their seafood products are sourced from mineral-rich waters across the globe and are responsibly harvested. Family-owned and operated by the Gulo family, who began their legacy in the food business from their personal love for seafood. The holidays are coming. Order all the delicacies for the Night of Seven Fishes. You can order sushi-grade octopus, squid, Chilean sea bass, wild Dover sole filet, and much more. They also offer premium meat, imported Sicilian desserts, and delicious pasta. Get the fastest delivery and shipping in the business. And their attention to detail in both packing and shipping assures freshness and quality. Go to FreshFinGourmet.com and see the vast array of choices for your special meal creation. That's Fresh, F-I-N, Gourmet.com.